Much to the chagrin of her progressive parents, in 1929, Gellhorn left Bryn Mawr after her junior year, only 1 year shy of her degree. She would later say of her parents, they didn't do any instructing, they just lived and were. Her mother, Edna, was a suffragette and a founder of the National League of Women Voters. She had a great sense of civic duty and what things should be made better. Her father, George, was a doctor, half of whose work was charity work, a man who cared a great deal more about his poor patients. She grew up watching two extremely generous, talented, and charming people live their lives with a moral code grounded in social justice. Her co-ed days behind her, Gellhorn got work first as a fact checker at the New Republic in New York City. There she wrote a profile of heartthrob Rudy Valley, published in August, observing that his shy, I can't imagine why I'm here pose is tiring. She almost decided to return home to St. Louis because the New York City skyline plunged her into despair. That September, she moved upstate and took a job as a cub reporter for the Times Union in Albany, where she covered streetcar crashes and the mortuary beat. Her first real story, never published, was about a child custody case. Gellhorn thought it would be a chance to be Don Quixote on a newspaper. She hoped her reporting might be able to direct public opinion to help the underdog. Waiting for her editor's indignation about the unfairness of the situation to match hers, she was repelled by his response that a lot of lousy middle-class muckers knocked each other around. Besides, they couldn't print the truth. The judge would haul the newspaper up for contempt of court. While on the mortuary beat for the Albany Times Union during the winter of 1930, Gellhorn reported on the death of a prostitute in a particularly frowsy brothel on South Birch Street, on which the coroner gave a verdict of suicide. Instructed by her editor to look for marks on the body which might contradict the coroner's verdict, Gellhorn was shown the corpses of three women. She found herself growing cold, shaking, wanting to scream that it was all too ghoulish to be true. The undertaker showed her the woman she was there to observe, and she noted a gray Marcel bob, matted, narrow shoulders. Her breast was sore and red. Resolving that the death that the poets are always muttering about, something lovely and calm, hell, they better shut up. Back at the Times Union office, she stayed a polite number of hours, excused herself, took a big breath, lit a cigarette, and marched off through the slush. It was in Albany that she began her friendship with Mrs. Roosevelt, a close acquaintance of Edna's through the National League of Women Voters. Her spouse Franklin was then governor of New York. Eleanor Roosevelt would become one of Martha's most intimate friends, a woman about whom she'd write, the finest conscience in America, the most effective one, too. A woman incapable of a smallness or cheapness and fearless. Heroes on the whole do not stand up well to the repeated tests of time and life, but she does, triumphantly. They use the word great in America to describe anything from a toothpaste to the latest leased book. Mrs. Roosevelt was great. It is a word that should be used with infinite caution and only correctly. But Albany, like New York City, could not engage Gellhorn for long. Europe was where she wanted to be, more than that, had to be. And the green coast of France was a door opening into that lovely grab bag world. She thought that perhaps she had always had a very slight capacity or desire for belonging, and was only meant to move about and look. She contacted a steamship company who provided steerage passage from New York to France in exchange for a couple of publicity stories about the joy of traveling on their line. In March 1930, at the age of 21, Martha had arrived in Paris, chasing her dream of becoming a foreign correspondent. It was what she wanted to do, so she did it. She was frightfully poor, which was instructive and valuable. And though those hardship years were in a way fake, because she could always have been bailed out by her family, she wasn't bailed out. And she said she would rather have died than have asked them for any money.